use the mobile recording kit.
Yeah.
It's good.
I mean, the mics picked up great.
I think the mics are great.
They picked up a lot of background.
I don't think they did. I haven't heard it with the closed eared headphones on. I just heard it through your speaker. It sounded good.
I think it sounds good. The mics did a great job of picking up the guests. It did not do a great job of filtering out the background. You'll hear more when you put it in your headphones.
It's fine. It's like when we recorded at Gen Con last year. Just the fact that we were there was awesome. And it didn't matter what was happening in the background. And it only added to it. So I think it's great when we can get out on the road and record.
Fair enough.
I think it's just me who has ingrained it in your head that audio is the most important thing.
It was one of the things that I pitched to the guests. We're going to make you sound good.
It's because we re-recorded the first episode we ever recorded like 5 times. And then a couple more after that, 3 times until we really felt like we had the audio right.
I'm Hunter Pence and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we
Google strategies instead of learning them.
My name is Mark.
My name is Jason.
ChatGPT not winning you many games?
It hasn't yet, but it will. I played Quacks of Quedlinburg, and it's a game that I learned while I was home in New York visiting family and friends, and I loved it. We're going to buy it. I tried to stay off the internet and not read about it after my first play, because I really wanted to just know how to win, and I did. But after the second time, I started Googling strategies. I wanted, what are you supposed to combine to really go off? And now I've done it. But I didn't at first. And I want my family to know that I wasn't cheating them when I played them. I lost most games I played.
Seems like your family brings out your competitive side of your gaming.
I think they would say that about me. We are a week from Gen Con. Are you terrified?
I'm a little bit salty.
Salty?
Yeah.
Why are you salty?
8 o'clock in the morning is really early.
Oh, yeah. The first exposure playtest times. We're going to be in the first exposure playtest hall, 8 a.m. to 10 o'clock each day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So 2 hours we're going to be in the hall. I didn't try for that time. I tried for 10 to 12. I wanted to be consistent. I just wanted to be one time all week, but they gave us 8 to 10. You can't be salty about that. You have to be.
Let me be salty about it until we get there. And then when we get there, I will be thrilled to be there and have live playtesters. And coffee's on you.
Coffee's on me.
I will be my lovely chipper self with my coffee in hand.
Buymeacoffee.com/themisplay. We'll talk about that in the future.
I see what you did there.
This week, while I was in New York, you went to Oakland. You were at the East Bay Board Game Convention. Tell me a little bit about it.
It was a really fun, intimate event. It was at the Oakland Marriott City Center. The con was really fun. I spent most of the time that I was able to be there in the proto-spiel where players were just put out signs that said, we want players. It was both playing designers' games who were leading playtests, and it was also just a game room for playing in. So I spent most of my time there. I had a lovely time. I met 3 really cool designers who were willing to share a little bit of time and talk about playtesting and prototyping and feedback and what to expect at Gen Con and even some next steps that we haven't even considered yet. It was time really well spent. I really enjoyed the 3 games that I got to play, Heist, Fury of the Elements, and Devil's Dice. And I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on their advice for us today.
Like the audience, this is going to be my first time hearing the audio as well. I know that you asked them about elevator pitches and you asked them about advice going into Gen Con. And I think you told me that at least 2 of the people you talked to have previously been in the first exposure playtest hall with games.
Yes. Mark from Fury of the Elements and Brooke from Devil's Dice have both been in the first exposure playtest hall at Gen Con.
After each interview, we'll stop for a second and we will talk about some of the action steps that we can take from their advice. But before we do that, today's episode is sponsored by Board Game Casual. Board Game Casual is a YouTube channel welcoming people into the board game hobby with video reviews, recommendations, unboxings, tips for accessorizing on a budget, and more. They have an excellent design video series that we've been learning a lot from. One episode in particular features an idea I wish we had, Mark. They take an existing game and explore how they would redesign it. That'd be a cool set of short videos that we could do. Give Board Game Casual a view at Board Game Casual on YouTube at Board Game Casual channel.
I'll even let you do it this time.
So, where are we?
The format we talked about was, let's listen to the interview clips, let's go through kind of takeaways, and then turn those takeaways into things that we're going to bring with us to Gen Con. There was a nice sense of narrative progression to me in that our guests were all at very different places in their design, develop, crowdfund, playtest, publish. So what we're going to present is we're going to present them in order of earliest in the process to most developed in the process in terms of where they are in the production of their game. So the first clip we're going to hear is Gregory with Heist.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we
fail to recognize end of game conditions and fail to meet them because we weren't paying attention.
My name is Mark.
My name is Gregory.
Obviously, Gregory, you are not Jason.
That is correct.
We're here at East Bay Board Game Convention, and I'm in the protospiel getting pitches and learning how to play games so that we can do a better job at Gen Con when we're in the first exposure playtest hall. Gregory, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Before we start, tell us a little bit about yourself as a gamer, and then I'm going to ask you to pitch me your game that we just played. It was wonderful, and we want to hear about it and have you share it with our audience.
Yeah, I actually didn't grow up playing games. My parents both hated games, so we never played any, and I discovered them when I went back to school later in life. But then I dove into it headfirst, and I host a meetup group, LGBT board gamers meetup group in Oakland. And I've made a lot of friends that way, and I just got an idea for a game and really wanted to try creating a game, and so I started several years ago on this idea for the game that I'm going to be talking about today, which is Heist.
Before we get into the origin story, give us the elevator pitch for the game. Ding!
So the game is called Heist, and it's all about putting together crew to get loot. Players hire crew members that they then use to pull off heists at places like a casino or a bank or something like that to get millions of dollars in loot. It's a traditional worker placement game with a lot of constraints on getting crew. We're competing for the same crew, we're competing for the same money, and we're competing against each other for the same heists. It's pretty much based in the gangster era, maybe the 1930s, Prohibition era, where master criminals are trying to just take over the city and get all the loot they can.
I'm a craven a heist. Tell us the origin story.
My favorite game is Lords of Waterdeep, and so that's a pretty traditional worker placement game. And so that started me thinking, like, how would I take that mechanic and use it in a game that was maybe a little more lightweight? So I decided to kind of take that mechanic and put it in a faster-paced game. And I love the idea of heists and going around and trying to collect crew members. And so that's really where I came about. And I just started creating it. I didn't really have designs to become a game designer, but I love doing the creative part of things. So if I'm going to play a game, it's natural for me to want to design a game. And so that's really how I got started.
I think if Jason were here, he would agree that we're new at this. We're just starting to bring the game to non-internal testers. Where are you in terms of testing the game and looking for a publisher?
Well, I'm also very new at this. This is my first game. So what I decided to do is really work on getting a prototype that had all the mechanics and the art and getting that tested. I've been testing a prototype 9 months now. I've also done a lot of testing on Tabletop Simulator on Steam. That's a much faster way. If you have a group of people who own Tabletop Simulator, I just get the graphics and upload them, and I don't have to do the pasting and the cutting and all that kind of stuff. So a lot of playtesting, a lot of iterations and changing of the mechanics and the art and that sort of thing. Really wasn't sure exactly what my marketing path would be. I wasn't saying, okay, I'm going to get on board with a publisher, or I have to self-publish because I don't want anyone messing with my game. I just sort of worked on the game and leaving the rest to later. I certainly have gotten a lot of information from people and places I've looked online that it's really hard to get a publisher interested in your game. So I kind of just dismissed that out of hand and decided I was going to self-publish. I also know Kickstarter and GameFound are, you know, this kind of crowdfunding sourcing is how even the big publishers now are releasing games and doing a single print for Kickstarter, and that's the end of the game. So I still haven't completely decided that, but I'm still leaning towards self-publishing. So at this point, since I've playtested the fairly high fidelity prototype several times, my next step is to actually order one from a professional printer that looks like a regular game. If I was going to do Kickstarter or if I was going to enter a competition, I would need to have a promo video that kind of tells my, you know, about the game and maybe a how to play video. And so I want that to actually look as professional as possible, even if it's not published. So I'm going to kind of a one-off printer to have that done. So right now I'm working on getting all the graphics files ready for a professional printer to send me that primo copy.
Last question before I let you go. You're a little further ahead in the process than where Jason and I are at with our game. What advice do you have for small designers that are maybe a little bit behind where you are?
One thing, just industry-wide, I would love to see small designers work together more. I know there are people who have designed games who are like, I'd love to create a co-op or get into publishing or something like that. And I know that's not a short-term immediate goal, like what do you do next? But I feel like there's a lot of room for that in the gaming community. There's a lot of independent game designers out there. There's not very many publishers who are willing to look at independent game designers. So I am currently in the phase of making as many connections with other game designers as possible so we can learn from each other. If you haven't already done that, I would highly recommend it. My focus on the game was much more on the mechanics and less on the story and the art, but I have found that people have been really attracted to the gangster era theme of the game, which wasn't even my original theme necessarily, and I've gotten a lot more interest by getting the artwork done. And I know people, if a publisher's going to look at it, they're going to redo all the artwork anyway, but if you're trying to get a lot of people interested in playtesting your game and maybe generating grassroots interest, I think that theme is really important for a lot of players. So that would be the other thing I would recommend you do.
Gregory, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with me at East Bay Board Game Convention. I had a lot of fun playing with Heist, and we're going to trade contact information behind the scenes. We want to know when and if Heist moves to crowdfunding or whatever mode of self-publishing or publisher that you find.
I'm very interested in networking with as many designers as possible, so I'm looking forward to that, and we'll stay in touch.
Pleasure meeting you. Take care.
Likewise. Thank you.
I love that you got a misplay from him. Did you do that with everybody?
I did.
Okay, nice. Good tie-in.
Well, before we had the plan for the show, I was like, oh no, I'm doing the show all by myself. It's just going to be them. So I wanted to give a little bit of continuity from the show. But I thought it was a nice way to kind of have something that, a plan that everybody would respond to.
I really like his Lords of Waterdeep origin story because I love that game as well. And I love the idea of, I kind of mentioned it earlier when I was talking about Board Game Casual. Like, here's a game that they like, but I think there's some things I want to change about it or a different theme that I want to put with it. So I really like that as an approach for designing a game. Promo video. They talked about a promo video. We got to do that in the future for sure.
I feel like that's still pretty far beyond where we are right now.
We are. What we're not far away from is, and if we're thinking about the action items we would take from what Gregory was saying about Heist was this idea of working together and connections. Let's start here, Mark. Last year we went to Gen Con.
Yes.
How many like business cards did we walk away with?
I walked away with one.
Me too. I had one. I feel like I made like one connection.
Oh, I just got one business card.
I made one small connection. I did reach out to them later, like on Instagram or something. This year when we walk out,
we've got to leave with a Rolodex of connections.
Yeah, we got to have a lot. I'm not saying we have to go in and just like walk around and collect business cards. We have to make like real connections with people, whether these are other game designers or these are people that happen to see that we're looking for players to play our game in the hotel lobby. Wherever we meet people, I think it's important we start developing connections and relationships with people.
That's also something we've talked about in relationship to the local community. We've been making efforts to get out to the Golden Gate Game Makers events. We went out and I made my way to East Bay Board Game Convention, where I ran into Randy, which was cool. We've talked about doing that on the local level as well. And so I think it stands to reason that at the North American Craft Fair, we should also be doing it there.
And I loved what Gregory said about building other people up. It's not connections just for the sake of, you know, connecting with people, but also like building them and elevating them and helping them with their games or helping them with their development or their advertising, their marketing, whatever, their marketing, whatever it is. I think that's really good advice and things we should be looking to do while we're at Gen Con.
Action step, buy a Rolodex.
Excellent. Fill it too.
The next guest that we have on for us from East Bay Board Game Convention is Mark from Fury of the Elements. They are about to launch their Kickstarter campaign. So they're kind of like next up in terms of where they are in the process compared to Gregory, who is just starting to think about the self-publishing process. This is where we want to be in 6 months. So here's Mark with Fury of the Elements. Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we
misplay by playing low-power cards against high-power cards and thinking that they can't win.
My name is Mark.
My name is Mark.
That's not your trick ear. Today we have Mark, designer of Fury of the Elements. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about you and your history as a gamer, and then we'll get into your game.
Obviously, I've been a gamer most of my life, between video games, card games, board games. I have ran game stores, both for video games and local game stores for card games, board games. I've built communities around card games and board games. See, I've done quite a bit of stuff. I've worked at distributors, so I've kind of been everywhere in this industry, and now I'm full into game design.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with me this morning. I know you're really deep into your design and getting ready to publish process. Give us the elevator pitch for Fury of the Elements.
Bend, break, and reverse the forces of nature in this epic strategy card game inspired by Triple Triad. Capture, command, and conquer the elements as you manipulate nature's forces to obtain the most elemental power. Summon creatures, command elemental titans, and cast powerful spells in an epic strategy card game for two players.
Love the nod to Triple Triad. I will die on the hill that Final Fantasy VIII is better than Final Fantasy VII.
I'm right there with you.
I got a chance to play the game with one of your developers. We had a really good time. I got to play the base version and the expansion. There's so much going on. Tell us the origin story of Fury of the Elements.
Obviously, we've mentioned Final Fantasy VIII and Triple Triad. That was one of the inspirations for the game because I spent so much time playing the mini game inside of Final Fantasy VIII that once I was working at a local game store, I wanted to start getting into designing my own games and switching from video game design to card games and board games because it was a little more accessible to me. That's where the inspiration came from. I wanted something that gave me that same feeling that was quick and easy to pick up, but I did want to expand on it, obviously, to make it my own. So while it is the inspiration and it's there, it definitely is our own game.
Jason and I are on our way to the first exposure playtest hall at Gen Con with a reasonable but early build of the game that we're developing. We're currently calling it Currents. What advice do you have for players in our shoes of what we should be looking to learn, achieve, and accomplish in the time that we get to spend in the first exposure playtest hall at Gen Con?
We unveiled Fury of the Elements for the first time in public, actually at Gen Con in 2023 in the playtest hall. For us, it was a really, really good experience. And despite the whatever the cost may be for you, I think it's invaluable because those people there will give you real feedback. They will help you form your game outside of friends and family and other gamers that you may know. Their experience really helped shape Fury. Even though the game was mostly done at that time, it really helped shape some mechanics. So I really think that you going there is probably one of the best things you could do. Take their feedback, take the criticism, good, bad, or indifferent. If you get a one or two off of, they say, well, this doesn't work this way or this should work this way, but you get 80 other people that don't say anything, then it's probably not an issue you need to address.
How did you collect and aggregate the feedback that you got?
So another piece of advice I'd give you is make a very simple, one-sided, short playtest feedback sheet. Make sure that when they come to the table that they understand, hey, you're looking for feedback and we would like to talk to you after you're done playing the game, and fill out this short little form, because it's just going to help you make a better game. And that's why you want their feedback. You want them involved in this process. And that worked out great. As soon as I got home, I went through all those sheets and got some very invaluable feedback that way. And I probably wouldn't have been able to remember it. We had over 85 people play the game, so it's a lot to remember everybody.
I'm here and take good notes. Before we wrap up, again, thank you for coming and spending a little bit of time to share your wisdom, expertise, and experience with us. How can people follow the Fury of the Elements?
Biggest ways to follow us would be on Instagram at FuryCG. You can look up and search Fury of the Elements on Kickstarter. We're getting ready to go to Kickstarter hopefully next month in August. That is the absolute best ways you can follow. On the Kickstarter pre-launch page is also our Discord link. That would definitely be a good way to follow us.
I don't think you heard it here first, but you definitely heard it here from good source. Mark, thank you so much for sitting down with us, and good luck as you move into launching the Kickstarter.
Thank you so much for having me.
I don't know if you felt the way I did, but I think that was the funniest moment in our podcast ever. You go, "My name is Mark." And then they go, "My name is Mark." I don't know. To me, it was just hilarious. It was just so funny.
We had a chuckle about it when we were playtesting Devil's Dice together.
Okay.
That's the first time I heard Mark's name.
How did you like Fury of the Elements? So I think it's cool that you played all of these games as well. How did you feel about Fury of the Elements? You actually sent me a link while you were at the con and said, "I need to check this out." So I went to their website. How was the game?
I really enjoyed it. It was very nostalgic for me. When I was playing, I observed that it played very similarly to this game called Triple Triad, which is a mini game in my favorite Final Fantasy. And he was like, "That's exactly what it is."
Oh, okay.
And then proceeded to say, like, you know, it's that, but it's all of this extra too. The game in Final Fantasy is very simple. Fury of the Elements is strategically deep. It was really interesting. It treated the mechanics of placing your cards in a really interesting way. There was a lot going on. It was a really cool game. I think you'd enjoy it.
Cool. Action step from the advice from Mark. To me, the biggest takeaway was making sure that we are getting feedback.
The part that stood out more to me than just get feedback was weighing feedback. How are you going to measure what feedback we have to act on and what feedback is outlier?
Absolutely. I think this comes up all the time for us. When we're just testing in our small, I can't say biome, our small sphere.
Our internal testing, if you will.
And when one person is like, they feel really strong about something, it's really hard to know, you know, how much to take that. You're only hearing it from one person, but there's only two other people who've played the game. And so maybe they're right. They're absolutely right. We have to make this change because the person who's playing it's not happy. We have to get more people to play it so that we can understand how much weight to put to somebody's comment. Even things I say when we're talking about grid size, 6 or 7, how important is what I'm saying? I'm willing, this is your quote, you use that all the time. I'm willing to be wrong, but it'd be really great to kind of, you know, see how other people feel about the size of the grid.
I think a way to consider weighing feedback, and something that Mark pointed out, was if you see the same feedback from a large number of people versus a singular instance of feedback, more people experiencing something the same way in the game is likely to be more representative than the single instance of a person being like, "Oh, there shouldn't be any borders because why would you have borders in this game?" If that's the only person who says that, where everyone else is like, "Well, the walls are strategically interesting," or "The walls didn't bother me." If that's your most frequent voice, I think it's reasonable to count on that being the way that a larger sample of individuals would respond to it as well.
Yeah. So definitely some work there trying to figure out how we get that feedback from.
I mean, everyone has kind of recommended some kind of like Google form, right? Or a form that you can fill out in the moment on the spot so you get immediate feedback before people walk away from the game. So the action step that we should take away from Mark's advice about Gen Con and First Exposure Playtest Hall is making sure that we have some way to record feedback from players and a way that we're going to weigh that feedback based on some metrics that we'll decide on, hopefully soon. Gen Con is coming up quick. But I'm glad that you brought that up, because Brooke from Devil's Dice kind of expanded that concept of feedback even further for us in their interview.
Hello, and welcome to The Misplay, where we
don't bluff enough.
My name is Mark.
And I'm Brooke Elf Nichols, the creator of Devil's Dice.
Brooke, welcome.
Thank you.
Give us the elevator pitch for Devil's Dice.
So Devil's Dice is a twisted cross between Coup and Liar's Dice, where you roll dice, lie, and steal from your friends in order to be the first to summon the devil.
Brooke, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about your history as a gamer and how you got into game design.
I'm a lifelong gamer. Been making games probably since I was about 3 years old, when I first started making worlds in my head, playing in the dirt. Next, I moved on to like carnival games that I would make as a young child. I made my own like cardboard box pinball machine once. When I was a little bit older, I got into my local gaming community and got really into this game called Dungeons & Dragons Miniatures. And there I made lots of great friends, and it was a formative experience because I saw that this could be like a lifelong passion. Later, I would very much enjoy games like Coup. It's a little bit sinister lying to your friends, but there's also something joyous in sort of sharing this playfulness. That really inspired me, I think.
All right, so there's bluffing, there's dice rolling, there's hidden information, there's stealing, and you're in a race. Tell us the origin story of Devil's Dice.
So the origin story is, one day I was just driving, and I was thinking about the board games that I've played the most, and I worked out that it was probably the games Coup and Liar's Dice. And I think the reasons for those games is they're so simple, so easy to break out, so easy to carry with you, that you can kind of take them anywhere and kind of play with anyone. So I took this idea and I brought it to my close friend, Rosten, and he has done a number of indie video games. And he just turns to me and he's like, all right, if you're gonna keep telling me about this idea, then we have to like make it. So I was like, you know what? I'll take that as a challenge and let's do it. So we started. He called up some of his game design friends to come over. We just kind of hashed it out over one evening and came up with what was essentially the first real concept. We wanted it to be about bluffing. We wanted it to be devil themed. And we just kind of kept building and building on that.
So we talked off mic that you have completed your crowdfunding campaign.
Yes, we had a very modest goal, but we exceeded it and we were able to unlock some of our stretch goals. I've been very happy with the whole thing.
So your primary team, it sounds like you're in a similar spot to Jason and I, where it's you and Rosten, your co-designer.
That is correct. We also have an artist that we've commissioned. They've done all of the art. They've done a fantastic job. We've also commissioned a few graphic designers for like little things. But in the end, I ended up doing a lot of the graphic design myself, but it was good to get a little bit of help here and there.
What would you recommend as the priority things for us to do going into the first exposure playtest at Gen Con?
I would really think about the kind of questions that you're asking people to answer. Broad questions can lead to broad answers. And so if you have something very specific, the most important thing is to understand how people feel about it, what they take away from it, what leaves an impression with them. So you want to word questions in such a way as to try to get at that. Get at the key thing that you're trying to do. Like, did they understand the story of your game? Did they understand some specific thing that you were trying to do with your game? Some mechanics that sort of cohere in a way. Did they understand it? If you have suspicions about things where your game is confusing or where your story might not be landing or the feeling that you're trying to create isn't being created, that's what you want to figure out. You want to be open to new things that you didn't consider. So that is also very key. If you repeatedly see the same thing over and over again, usually that is a signal that something is happening. People are having a similar experience, and it's good to figure out why.
Great advice. Brooke, thank you for taking the time to sit down and talk with me. How can people follow Devil's Dice as you roll it out for distribution?
Yeah, thank you so much. We are The Devil's Dice Game on Instagram, or you can find us at thedevilmaycaregames.com, where you can pre-order Devil's Dice. And it's pre-order available now, and we'll ship out hopefully in the next month or two.
Congratulations. It sounds like a really exciting time.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
So, Mark, I've got to ask, I want to know more about Devil's Dice, because this sounds like a game I would really like. Bluffing, trying to get somebody to believe something that's not true. There's a dice element. Tell me more about Devil's Dice.
So there were kind of three major pieces to it. There was the hidden information of what dice you're holding. There were ways to re-roll your dice. And then there were different actions that corresponded to, there were six options because there are six sides of the die. And so it had this kind of like press your luck feel as you try to finagle your way into having a collection, like a Yahtzee collection of one of all the symbols in the game. I thought it was really interesting. It was fun. I thought the theme was cool.
You were right that Brooke expanded on talking about feedback. And I really liked what Brooke said when Brooke said, broad questions lead to broad answers. We can't ask a question for currents where we're just like, what do you like? What did you like? Was it fun? Like, we know those aren't questions that we should be asking. And I think we're going to have to do some work, not just on the podcast here in a minute, but it's just like, we're going to off mic, we're going to have to sit down and work on this form and the really types of specific questions that we feel we can get answered from other people.
Action step, right? What really specific takeaways do we want to get from probably the highest volume of really proficient playtesters that we're going to have access to in the development of this game? That,
oh, you're looking at me for one.
Well, I mean, that generating that list,
yeah.
I think having a strong feedback form is the thing that we need to walk out of Gen Con with, in addition to our Rolodex.
I'll throw one question out there right now. We can talk about, are gray tiles too strong? Is that a specific way to ask that question? Just for anybody, there's three tiles in the game. There's orange, there's blue, and there's gray. And each tile does something different. In our internal testing, we're finding gray is pretty strong. We've talked about reducing the number of grays in the pool as a solution. How do we ask people if they feel gray tiles are too strong, especially if we already cut them down? Do we cut them down? Do we not cut them down?
Do we change it to a different mechanic?
Well, that's just option C.
Always be pivoting.
Always be pivoting. That's our motto over here at the Misplay.
I mean, sometimes you have to pivot from what color you're trying to assemble your pattern in. Legit strategy.
No, you're right.
I think, are gray tiles too strong? I do think is something specific that's worth investigation. But I would wonder if maybe a better way of asking the question is, do the different ways of manipulating the board feel balanced in how effective they are at advancing your game plan?
Okay.
Or disrupting your opponent's game plan? Suffice to say, we have to spend our time leading up to Gen Con to really generate a feedback form based on the things that we don't understand about the game yet.
Great. We got a week to do that. And looking at my watch here, just a few days to go.
It's coming up fast.
So it was really great that you went there. We talked about what our takeaways were going to be just from listening what the three designers were talking about. And you kind of did one of those. One of those takeaways is connections. Like what you did last week and what you're doing right now is, you know, developing connections with people. That's really, really important. So just to summarize what our takeaways were, connections. That was the first one from Gregory with Heist. Getting some form of feedback from Mark with Fury of the Elements, and then figuring out how to weigh that. Is what they're telling you important enough to make a change in the game? And then lastly, with Brooke from Devil's Dice, we're talking about how to make sure that when we're asking for feedback, we're doing so in a very specific way, that we're not asking broad questions. We have to understand what we want to know. And this is something I'm so bad as yelled at me about a lot over the last couple of weeks, is making sure that I understand what I believe the game to be and what sort of questions I should be asking people who are testing it, not just going, was it fun? Would you play it again? Well, those are good questions. There's not a lot to be gained from that. And then the only other thing that we haven't talked about, we didn't talk about it at all with any of the interviews, but it was one of the reasons that we wanted you to go to this, was to get elevator pitches, to hear people talk about their games, because we really have to do a good job of that. We really have to do a good job of this at Gen Con. We want to make connections with people, you know, that could be manufacturers, and we want to be really snappy. You like my snap, yeah. We want to be really snappy with what we think the game is and how we can entice people to go, oh, that sounds cool. So you and I both wrote our own elevator pitches before the show started.
I'm glad you came back to that because I was like, oh no, we did this whole show and we haven't talked once about the whole reason that I pitched this format to Jason. Pitched.
It's good.
So I'm glad we're doing this. It's going to be an interesting experiment to see how aligned our vision for the game is.
Oh yeah. You have yours blacked out. I can't even see yours now.
Why don't you go first? Ding.
Oh, hey, what's up? Hello. How you doing? We've done this before, Mark. You can't just walk into an elevator and start pitching your game. You can't just walk in and just launch into your game title. You haven't even like said hello. They haven't asked you, like someone to like, oh, what are you doing here? Like,
are you here for Gen Con?
I am. Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm developing a game. The game is called Currents. It's a two-player abstract board game where you're trying to make your secret pattern, but also accidentally helping your opponent make theirs. You push, pull, and swap tiles on a shared board while occasionally screaming internally, why would you do that? What are you even trying to do? The first to make their pattern wins. Currents by the Misplay.
I see you really leaned into the chaos comment.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that going on when you're playing the game. You're like, why are they doing that? Like you're running through your head. Why are they putting that? Why would they do that? Why would somebody do that? What are they telling me? That's how I feel when I'm playing.
Sounds stressful.
Great. Get off, ding. All right. I tried to have some fun with it, but hit on some key things like two-player abstract game, secret patterns, you know, push, pull, swap, things that the tiles do. Why don't you give me your elevator pitch? Ding.
Hello.
Hey, what's up? You a board game designer? I see you're wearing a tag. What's the Misplay?
Oh, well, I have a podcast. I'm also designing a game. Can I practice my elevator pitch on you?
Yeah, dude, nobody listens to podcasts, but go ahead.
Currents is an abstract tile placement game that sparks a predator and prey battle of wits between two players with the twists and turns of the tiles to unlock a hidden path to the treasures hidden beneath the ocean's depths.
Yeah, those are different. Oh, wait. It sounds great. I'm a little confused. I don't understand treasures. Like, what's the treasure? Do you win something?
You win the game.
It's not like a gold or like a chest or...
No. Okay. Abstract.
All right. Well, you leaned into a theme that kind of exists with currents. With currents, the ocean. I'm back to me now. I'm Jason.
I mean, that is largely what we've talked about in terms of broad scope for the theme.
Yeah. I think I stayed away from the theme in my elevator pitch. I just went with abstract game. You said abstract too, did you? Yeah, mm-hmm. You said abstract as well. But you went a little bit into, you know, what a theme could be. Ocean's depths.
I'm trying to catch someone's attention if I want them to sit down.
Yeah. What were similar, what were different?
I feel like yours captured abstract and the physical mechanics a lot better than mine. You know, pushing tiles, pulling tiles, even though we don't have pulling in the game.
You've got the battle of wits, so you've got like the... You're up against, you're playing somebody else. And it really is like a head-to-head challenge battle puzzle that you're trying to figure out and solve. So you've got that aspect of it. Whereas I went accidentally helping your opponent. Like, because that's how I feel. I feel like, I just blew it.
I think ideologically, I think the biggest difference is I'm envisioning pitching the final product. And I think you're envisioning pitching where the game is right now.
Yeah, that's true. So with that, we're off.
To Gen Con.
Right? Our next episode will be live, just like last year. We'll have a live episode. I want to do it again in Lucas Oil Stadium.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay. It worked out great last year.
I thought so. So the next time you hear from us, we will have put our game in front of people at the first exposure playtest hall and hopefully made connections, gotten feedback.
And then we'll be going through all that feedback to make the game better.
Or pivoting and just building Animal Kingdom.
I have three other ideas that are not Animal Kingdom if pivoting is really on the table.
Pivoting's not on the table. Get out of here.
Tender Mercenaries.
Oh, okay. Pivot. Let's do it.
The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Adjos, Brian, Bins, and Peter. Consider donating at buymeacoffee.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our form at themisplay.com/sponsors. The August newsletter is going to be due.
So is the June newsletter.
You got to move past June, Jason.
Oh my goodness. The Misplay is hidden in those two comments.